If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out of the broom closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Take it away.
Whoa ho!
It's Friday.
It's Friday. It's just a little past Eamball. It's got light, and I don't know what else I maybe wanted partying.
I think we had a lot of licorice before the show started, so maybe some sugar high things going on here.
Sugar? Sugar? What's that?
At least I had a lot of licorice. I actually literally threw the bag at Elvira's shoulder and not let me eat any more of it.
Of course, and that left it in my hand, so not only did I wind up have a few more, but then there's chocolate chip cookies here, so whoopsie. Okay, so now that we're on a rush, let's go for it.
Yay.
Yes, so.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome.
Yes.
How's the life?
It's still here as far as I can tell. They haven't blown it up, messed it up, or in any way, shape, or form, you know what it up. But how was your week?
Good.
Good.
Good. I'm about halfway through Elements of Magic that I'm teaching at Milk and Honey on Tuesday nights, and it's going so lovely. The group is so sweet, and we had a really great class this last Tuesday, and so that's lovely.
Oh.
Nice when things are going well.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do a little knock on wood.
Which we actually have a wood table here.
Keep that going. And then yesterday, or I don't know, a couple days ago, someone posted on Facebook, only 16 days till PantheaCon. And I went, oh, crap. I'm giving a presentation at PantheaCon.
Oh, my.
And I know what I'm doing, and I'm very excited about it. But, you know, as you know, Elvira,
yeah,
there is a Missionary Independent Spiritual Church published a book that I wrote on hoodoo shrines and altars.
Yes.
And altars are a thing that I'm super into. I love creating altars and building shrines, and it's fun and it's artistic.
Mm-hmm.
So I am doing a workshop on altars. And so I've been gathering what I want to do in this workshop is let everyone build their own little traveling altar.
Oh, nice.
So I'm gathering little tiny mini trinkets, right? So I have all these little trinkets and beads and evil eye beads and fabrics, and I got to get glue stuff. So I have a long list of things I need to get, and it wasn't until that someone posted that I realized, oh, that deadline is looming.
Right.
I'm one of the very first presentations at 1:30 on Friday, so
ooh.
I can't even like, oh, I'll grab some stuff in San Jose. No, I got to be ready to go.
Right then and there.
So I'm excited about it. And if you don't know what PantheaCon is, just a little plug on that. It happens every year, President's Day weekend, so it starts on Friday, February 17th, and ends on Monday, February 20th this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the largest pagan gathering in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
2,000 to 3,000 people attend, and it's at the Doubletree Hotel in San Jose. And it's amazing. There's traditions from all over the world represented.
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge vendor room with amazing shopping.
Oh, yes.
There's workshop after workshop after ritual after ritual. And so you get to taste and sample other traditions than your own.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to be in a giant conference hotel with 2,000 pagans and witches. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited, and I'm feeling the pressure of my deadline.
Yes, and to top it off, 2 weekends from now on that Friday, we are going to be doing a live show from PantheaCon.
Live from PantheaCon!
Yes. And hopefully we'll have both of us down there. She definitely will be there. We are working on avidly getting our tech person, who's the cauldron, and another person and myself down there so we can do this. So we will keep you posted.
And we're starting to reach out to some BNPs, big name pagans, to see if folks would be willing to chat with us about what they're up to and why they love PantheaCon. And there's quite a few folks that Elvira and I both know that have recently had books out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they would love to share their amazing books with the world.
Definitely.
And so we're gonna have some cool people to talk to.
Yes. So that's a must talk about later, and obviously my week didn't have that kind of pressure. It just had the standard get yourself through work and clients and stuff, and, you know, it's raining, and there's kind of a somber mood. I want to kind of hibernate, and since Punxsutawney Phil said we're going to have more weather that is cold and icky.
Does that count for us? Isn't that just Pennsylvania?
I don't think so. Well, I got news for you. As far as I can tell, our weather reports are saying
rain
through Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hum. But other than that, it's, you know, it's just the beginning of the light and the moving of the energy, and some things that feel stuck have to get worked on, and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And with that, I'm going to hand it over to Phoenix and what she's going to start our talk with.
Bridget, Our Lady, Queen of our Hearth, Goddess who guards the heart of our home, threefold flame who shines in the center, we honor and praise you. We offer you our words of worship. Queen of poets, may our lives be creative. Queen of smiths, may our lives be useful. Queen of healers, may our lives be healthy. Your family is standing before you here, confident that you will do what is right. Hail Bridget.
Hail Bridget. Well,
In bulk.
Well, I guess the next step is to say what the heck Aimbolt is and why we would be talking about
it. That's an excellent question.
That is an excellent question. Now we have to come up with an excellent answer.
Oh, crap. Well, I think the simple mathematical answer, right, is the ancient folks, our ancestors of long, long ago, were able to look, because they paid closer attention to the nature that was happening around them, they knew on the solstices that it was the shortest and the longest days of the year.
Right.
And they knew on the equinoxes that things, the light and the dark, the day and the night, was balanced. And so those were moments, those were markers, those were important days. And then at some point in the evolution of that, the cross quarters, the moments in between those moments, the midway point between the equinox and the solstice, or the solstice and the equinox, became another marker.
Right.
And here we are at one of those markers, between winter solstice and the spring equinox. We have Imbolc,
also known as Brigantia, the Festival of the Brigantia, or Candlemas.
Right. And there are some other names, too, that I have written down, but that...
And we'll probably mention them as we go.
Yeah. My notes are all out of order at the moment. I apologize.
But so there are different meanings of Imbolc. I think that one of them is the belly, and the other one is in milk.
Right.
So we have different, you know, just like we have different meanings or versions of the meaning, it's just of words that we have in our own language. These are words that mean that it is the time when the child which is born at the darkest time has started to grow and it is being nurtured, is, you know, one of the myths that goes out.
And the Imbolc has become pretty commonplace in the Wheel of the Year for modern pagans, for modern witches, but this is super Celtic, super Celtic.
Mm-hmm.
Although other places in the world were likely honoring this time, and again, any culture that was measuring the solstices and the equinoxes, which most of them were,
right,
may have had a midway point acknowledgement or celebration, but we know that the Irish were. We know that the Scottish were. And so a lot of what we do in our modern practice is based off of that. So I want to be super clear that this is a very Celtic-y holiday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, just like with you, a lot of we get is Norwegian.
Well,
those Norse folks.
Those Norse folks up there.
Yeah.
The cold.
Yeah, and there's also that translation, like Elvira was talking about, you know, milk, but specifically the ewe's milk.
Right.
There's the lambing begins at this time of the year, the baby sheeps. They're so freaking cute.
I know.
There's nothing cuter than a frolicking sheep baby. Oh, my gosh. It's like, it's so cute. But also cleansing. Is a potential translation.
Right.
Personally, I feel like the cleansing translation is a bit of a stretch. I think that's another thing where someone's like, well, they do this over in this part of the world and in this part of the world. So I'm sure that's what they meant too. And I don't necessarily know that I believe that, but it's okay.
Right. Well, and here's the thing. What happens after a long, icky winter where you're kind of still hanging out in the cold and the stuff and you're smelling and life is kind of rank?
And the whole village is living in the big house together.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's ever done, you know, like dorm living or camping where, you know, you have the big tents or when you go out with kids going into the different camp houses, it's like,
yeah.
So you definitely want some kind of cleansing, purification, smoking out all the ickies. So I think that that's another reason why it became associated with that.
Right.
And this is we're talking agrarian, ancient people. We're not talking about what we will talk about later, that it kind of moved into or was usurped into some other areas.
Right.
But, and of course, we have Rome. Rome, it was, you know, basically the month of February was just, you know, Juno Fabratia. And she was,
Romans love to party, man.
Oh, they love to party, yeah. You know, and Lupercalia in the Striga tradition is again the same thing. It's just, you know, purification, and it's that they kind of worked with more purification. But
And there was the Brigid in Irish and Scottish traditions is often connected to this day, which we'll talk more about throughout the show. But it's also, there's fire involved in Imbolc celebrations. And for one of her faces is the blacksmith, the goddess of the forge. So we have this fire energetic. And that was also true from the Greeks and the Romans, was there was candles. There was a lot of burning and purification through fire and smoke. And also the Norse, this is the time of the Feast of St. Lucia.
Right.
And that's where you've probably even seen the crowns with the candles, which seems like a very bad idea to me.
Let's put a crown of burning candles on someone with hair.
Right, and don't move, because then you have wax all over your head and hair. But those rings that are worn, those crowns with the burning candles, comes from St. Lucia's celebrations in Scandinavia.
Right.
We have this
threat of fire, mm-hmm. this threat of cleansing, mm-hmm. this threat of milk and lambs and feasting mm-hmm. and all of that that comes with this time of the year.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, you figure they're all kind of, we're waning, we've gotten, we're down on our stock, we're down on the wood, we're down on the food, you know, it's getting down to the bottom, you know, the bottom of the barrel, so to speak. So, but then the light starts to come back, so the things are starting to show renewed life, and you might find, you know, more food somewhere.
Right. And for some folks, too, I mean, we're taking, again, this the origins of this holiday come from areas where it was still snowing
yes.
at this time of the year.
Oh, yes.
You know, here in Northern California, the daffodils are starting to bloom at this time of the year.
They are.
This is sort of the beginning of our rainy season. Mm-hmm. You know, we get rain through the winter, through December, mm-hmm. but really this is kind of the rainy season
mm-hmm.
for us.
Mm-hmm.
This clearly is the beginning of spring.
Right.
In Northern California.
In Northern California.
But in other parts of the world, and truly for the folks who this holiday was born from, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
It would have felt like, all right, we made it through the worst of it, but we're not done yet.
Right. And interesting, as I did research, they were talking about, here we have the light coming back, and it is a festival of light, not
yes.
warmth, and the fire is not about keeping us warm. It's about the light mm-hmm. in bringing more light, and, you know, our day's getting more light.
Yeah.
But it was also talking about that even though the light was there, it was still part of the coldest time of the year. And as
yes.
you were talking about, in the particular area, it is still the coldest time. California, we're still having cold weather, and we're all complaining about it.
Right.
But not like you would have had in Ireland and Scotland and
right.
things of that nature. So, but, and it's also the time of sap rising and maple trees and, you know, returning of certain birds coming back. You know,
crocus flowers tend to bloom at this time of
yeah,
year.
And certain spring constellations are starting to come up.
Yes.
So it is the beginning of that spring energy moving in.
Right. And in some traditions, this is the transition from the crone's time of the year
mm-hmm.
To the maiden's time of the year,
exactly.
right? So she is born on this day. She, the maiden steps into her role. Her beauty now is
mm-hmm.
taking over where the crone is passing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there is that energetic of shifting, not just from a weather perspective, but also this sort of spiritual overlay.
Right. And as we know, Persephone is starting to, you know, in the traditions of the Mediterranean people, it is, you know, Persephone's time starting to come, because remember, they only had three seasons. They didn't have us,
right.
you know, the four.
Right. Which is true in a lot of
yeah.
ancient traditions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I also found it just really interesting about the energy, about the old dying and then the new
yeah.
coming in. And quite frankly, I guess if I'm going to say anything personal, that is what I've been feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It really is that shift of energy. And I'm much more sensitized this time around, maybe because I'm spending time with what we're doing here, writing about it, being conscious of it, being more present with it.
Right.
Because other times you kind of skate through with all your daily stuff
mm-hmm.
and kind of go, whoa.
Mm-hmm. I have a little fire pit in the backyard, and it's been raining quite a bit here. And last night I wanted to do a little Bridget fire
mm-hmm.
and burn some of this old ritual stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to enough workshops and rituals and classes, and you end up having all these little things that you've made and created.
Yes.
And sometimes it's time to let that crap go.
Yeah.
And it was too rainy to have a fire, and I was like, oh, well, you know, I wanted to do a little fire for Bridget. And we walked up. There's a little pub down the street, and we walked there, my partner and a friend, and they have these huge fire pits outside. And we got seated next to a fire pit, and I ordered a beer and something to eat. And all of a sudden, I had the realization, oh, I'm having a Bridget fire. It's just not in my backyard. I'm not
right.
releasing, but I'm still honoring the fire,
right.
that energy.
That's cool.
It was cool.
That was really cool.
Spontaneous.
Wow. Well, obviously, the goddess works in mysterious ways, right?
True.
No matter how much we try to get an idea what it actually represents and go through the this is where I can pigeonhole it.
Right.
But, and I think that, you know, looking at the different aspects, this is also a time when a lot of witches are initiated,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
in terms of being part of the tradition that they are in. It doesn't necessarily mean every tradition does this, but I know that a lot of them do.
Right. That is true. New
so,
beginnings.
This is new beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
So, and...
Yeah. And there are several goddesses connected to this time of the year, but the one that comes up the most is Brigid.
Mm-hmm.
And Brigid is Irish, but there is belief that perhaps there were Brigids all over the Celtic
mm-hmm.
world,
mm-hmm.
And they've sort of been centralized into Kildare
right.
and the Hill of Tara and all of this.
Right.
It could be that at one point a version of Brigid was in many places.
Mm-hmm.
And Brigid has many names, Brigantia being one of them,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, is the name of the island of Britain.
Right.
Right. So there is a lot of lore and mystery around the goddess Brigid.
Mm-hmm.
And I got super triggered the other day from someone who we were talking about Brigid, and they were explaining to me that there was this ancient goddess Brigid,
right?
And then there was a Saint Brigid, and Saint Brigid lived and was, you know, all of these things and
mm-hmm.
all of this stuff. And my opinion is that's bullshit. My opinion is no. There was this ancient goddess,
right?
And in order to get people to stop celebrating Imbolc
mm-hmm.
and start honoring whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Say, okay, but that we'll call it, it's Saint Brigid's Day.
Right.
We'll just make her a saint. Then you guys will stop being rowdy heathens and you'll honor
mm-hmm.
this day as
mm-hmm.
you know something connected to the church. I don't think that Brigid ever was a human daughter of a druid, all of the beautiful stories about her. I think that's all a bunch of bunk
right.
made up by the church. And I know that that is a very controversial thing to say.
Mm-hmm. But then again, don't we want to get into some controversy here?
But I completely disagreed with this person.
Mm-hmm.
But that is another thing connected to this day. It's St. Brigid's Day.
Right.
And there are beautiful stories about St. Brigid and who she was and the things that she did and the magic of that saint, you know, because
mm-hmm.
saints have to have some sort of magic, right? But I don't believe for a second that she really exists.
No, because you and I both have discussed and know, even on the show as well as off the show, that this was a time of one culture taking over and one religion taking over, and if you can't get people to do it one way, you're going to either cut the groves down and put your churches on top of where the groves are to force them to still come and worship at where they were, but in your place, or you're going to take some of the time-honored traditions or deities and incorporate them.
Right.
And, I mean, that gets into a little bit of, you know, what is Candlemas? Because Candlemas in itself
mm-hmm.
has two versions. You were talking about one before the show.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Candlemas is another name,
mm-hmm.
right, for Imbolc.
Right.
Right, yeah.
And because of that, we have both the Christian church's version of Candlemas and then an even more ancient and older version.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we go with, this is where after Mary had Jesus and the timing between, obviously, Yule, his birthday, Christmas,
yes.
to this time frame, Candlemas, in their tradition, it was considered women could not go into the church.
Hmm.
They could not go into the church because they were unclean.
Hmm.
And having birth was unclean. And there was a big thing about whether Mother Mary was to be included on this, and there was, you know, some things about the whole process. But what they would do...
Of course she would have been included. No one knew Jesus was Jesus.
Well, this is after the fact now,
yeah, yeah.
realize.
I'm sorry.
You're being literal. and we can't be
sorry.
So it turns out that what happens is that women could not go into the church because all women were unclean if they had had babies.
Right.
They had to be cleansed, so they had to have this, like, waiting period.
Right.
And then they could come in, and then...
Like maternity leave.
Exactly. It was a maternity leave from work, but I don't think they got off
from
of work
church.
At home,
right.
From the church.
Right.
And then, of course, they would be able to come in, and it was called churching, actually. That was what the terminology became. And there was a big thing about this, and, you know, of course, they had all these different, you know, back and forth things.
Right.
But that was the reason... For Candlemas was the point of certain number of days that they had to stay out of being involved in the religious location.
Is that why that this is often called in Ireland the feast day of Mary of the Candles?
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
When she came back, her job was something to do with candles?
Yes,
something
to do with that. Well, the light. She brought the sun in.
Oh, right.
Remember, we've given birth to the sun.
Right. Okay. I like that.
Yes. So that was something I kind of caught on to, and I'm going, well, that explains why, you know, you've got a lot of mention of Candlemas
right.
in the church. But,
right.
of course, it was a little bit, I got a little edgy there about saying that women are unclean after birth and they have to have sort of a place where they can't be, you know, like touched or dealt with or go into
I
the
like
spirit
that.
Class.
I like it. They go, you know, it's like the red tent, right?
Mm-hmm. So there you are with the version of that. Now, the other version you were talking to me about was when Candlemas was in terms of the actual, another version, another timing. So you
right.
speak that.
Well, apparently, in doing my research for today, this was not something I knew before this week.
Mm-hmm.
The Candlemas is traced back to the 4th century in Greece. Later, it was adopted by the Roman Catholic Church, but that wasn't until the 7th century.
Right.
So there are some folks out there who believe that this holiday was invented in Greece, and it was actually a local
mm-hmm.
religious celebration in, you know, the Greek
mm-hmm.
Catholic Church.
Right.
And it was then absorbed by
the Roman Catholic Church.
So who knows, you know, who knows what how much validity is in that, but... You know, clearly Candlemas has its own origins
and
that
history.
Don't really have anything to do with paganism.
Right.
It's not like this is a holiday that they, quote-unquote, stole from
right.
the pagans and painted a Christian veneer over it. But there is some amount of overlap. And again, it's because, I mean, let's just be really realistic here. It's because this is the midway point.
Yep.
Between the solstice and the equinox. That's the only reason that this day is important and would have been important.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, lots of different religions and faiths and cultures would have noticed that.
And then made up
just logic.
Accordingly in their own belief systems.
Yeah.
They created their own myths, their story, the reasons, the
yeah.
different, you know, things that needed to be done. So, again,
yep.
we have all of that. And you know, It's fascinating because when you start looking outside your own door and you start looking at the multitudes of things that are out there that people have done for millennials and millennials and all the rest of it, it's the fact that they all have seen the certain changes in the earth
right.
and the season.
They're paying attention.
So, I think that's important for us as modern pagans and modern people
mm-hmm.
to pay attention to the changing time, be more aware.
Yes. Well, and we've said this before, and we've probably said this in every show, but we have these ideas that come from our ancestors. We have these ideas that come from this ancient
mm-hmm.
culture.
Mm-hmm.
But look at where you live. You know, Elvira and I live in this area. It's rainy right now. The dandelions are starting to poke their heads up. This is what... The hillsides are green because
mm-hmm.
we're actually getting rain.
Right.
This is what it is to be in the Imbolc time here. But in Minneapolis right now, it's snowing
mm-hmm.
and it's freezing and it's
mm-hmm.
cold
mm-hmm.
and it's icy. So the Imbolc looks very different. And for someone living in Florida, Imbolc looks very different. And for someone living in Alberta, Canada, and Australia,
mm-hmm.
who's celebrating Samhain, or
right.
Samhain, but... Llamas. You know, these all look different. So what does it look like where you live right now?
Mm-hmm.
How does Imbolc fit into the cycle and the seasonal of you and your environment.
Right.
That's the important thing.
And that comes to what we'll probably start discussing afterwards is the personal reasons, what
yes.
this is about personally. The photograph that I took of the altar is a corn mother, and this was something that was done where the corn from the last harvest is then dressed in a white dress as the corn bride and is honored and put in a basket and you know, then after the actual ritual or celebration of Imbolc, it would be put at your front door outside, minus the dress because it's just the corn, but it represents prosperity coming in and health and wealth and happiness. So
mm-hmm.
it is. And then the old one from the year before is burned and destroyed.
Right.
So that is a little bit of a magic that they used with their own harvest from the year before.
Right.
So, but then what do we do with us? That will be our question for after our break.
Yeah.
But at this point, I think we still have a few more minutes.
Yeah.
So... one of the things I did notice in reading, it's like, think of, as Phoenix said, about the different goddesses. There are all these different goddesses throughout the world that represent different aspects of spring in Japan, in Korea, in Hawaii, in Australia, in South America. They all, the Pueblo Indians, they all have one of these energy patterns that personifies that
mm-hmm.
and new life and birth. I actually just talked to someone today, which I didn't know, for 10 days straight on the Big Island, I believe it is, the volcano is spewing out lava, and it's not the normal way that lava comes out. It's just, it's like this, it's totally different. It's like a dark red, and it's mm-hmm. really intense in terms of that. And if you think about the lifeblood, the aspect of birthing, she is birthing because that eventually becomes new land.
Yeah.
So,
well, and if you look at the wheel of the year,
uh-huh.
it follows the cycle of life.
Uh-huh.
I mean, right?
Uh-huh.
And at this time of the year, it's the very beginnings. It's that the buds are just barely starting. They're just thinking about,
mm-hmm.
you know, coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And those buds grow and they become blossoms and
mm-hmm.
those blossoms become fruit and those fruits fall from the tree and then the seeds go back into the earth and everything goes quiet and follow. I mean, it's just like the cycle that humans go through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even with our modern day lights and
mm-hmm.
different cycles of time, we still feel it.
Yeah.
We may ignore it, but we still feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And our system goes through it. And if you notice that there are people that go through light deprivation, it's an illness that...
Seasonal affective disorder.
Yes, thank you. Politically correct.
Yes.
Where it is part of it. I mean, we've made it a disorder.
Right.
Which is really interesting because it's a natural cycle.
Yeah.
We have, and we've usurped that natural cycle by putting lights out and things where you don't go to sleep at the time and wake up at the time and move at, you know, the pace.
Right.
So.
Right. It would be more common to sleep more
mm-hmm.
in the winter
mm-hmm.
than we allow
mm-hmm.
in the modern world.
Right.
For our ancestors.
And that. Again,
yeah.
you know, hibernating bears. That's
yeah.
you know, another one of those. They there is a sense of hibernation,
yes.
and it's interesting because during this week I've had two friends basically tell me, and it's because some things they're going through, but they need to pull within, hibernate.
Mm-hmm.
They need to pull within to find their center and see what's going on with what's happening, and it's. First of all, I'm very proud that they're doing this and saying it.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, I'll tough it out and I'll go ahead and do this and do that and do the other thing. That's number one. Number two, that they are actually paying attention.
Yeah.
And that's really important. So pay attention to the cycles. I know we may not be always able to do it because we have to go to work and we have to do certain things where we have kids or we have animals or whatever it is that we're responsible for that we can't really do all of the cycle. But listen.
Yeah.
And follow. Follow the thoughts and the feelings. It's also a time of scrying, of looking to the future for direction. And interesting is that the two things then for February, and this is not just because it says so in a correspondence, but it's there, but it's also what the Romans were about, is that it's love and money, love and commerce, love and prosperity. It's not so, even though we have February 14th as a modern Valentine's Day holiday, it is prosperity for companies and people, but it is the idea that this is the beginning. So setting your sights on what it is you want to start doing.
Right. Making your intention.
Right.
And the whole New Year's resolution idea is an earlier form of Bridget, and it aligns to our modern calendar.
Right.
But and I keep saying Bridget in place of In Bulk because my reclaiming tradition, we call In Bulk Bridget.
Right.
So that's why I keep slipping there. But in In Bulk, we set intentions and we make pledges and we create our goals for the coming year.
Uh-huh.
And that is very much like what we do it on New Year's Day.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there is that to be done, too. I mean, this is, and even though it's
break time.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candelo's Corner with Candelo Camisa and Michael Carell, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, Bitter Foxy with Madame Naya and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7, and Liquid Libations with Andrea Western, Saturdays 5 to 7. All time specific. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
We're back.
Yes. Thank you, Nagashiva.
Yes. I always get energized with that. It's just like, you know, bouncy.
Yeah.
Okay, so what is it you would like to follow through now? We can talk.
Let's do a little more Bridget.
Good, you got it. Go for Bridget.
Okay.
Instead of go for broke.
Go for Bridget. So one of Bridget's sacred sites is the Hill of Tara in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And her, there is a mound there. And the inner chamber of that mound actually aligns with the rising of the sun on Imbolc.
Ooh.
Also on Samhain.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some magical thing at this mound.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been there, but that is one of the places on my list that I would like to go.
Mm-hmm.
There is lots and lots and lots of stuff about Bridget. And what's interesting is in a couple of weeks we're going to do a show on Bridget.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about a lot of this again. But it's impossible to talk about In Bulk without diving into the energy of this goddess. And, you know, she does have a triple face, but it's not that maiden mother crone that you see in a lot of other goddesses. She, in the Celtic system, which we've mentioned before, they work with the elements as land, sea, and sky. There are three elemental forces, and then the fire is what goes between and within and transforms.
Right.
So here we have Bridget, who is goddess of land, sea, and sky.
Mm-hmm.
You may think the forge is connected to fire, and it is, but it is also connected to land.
Right.
Because it is where you create things, where you work iron, where you work with things to create weapons, all of this, right?
So right.
There is Bridget of the forge, Bridget of land.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Bridget, who is the midwife and healer.
Right.
And here we see this connection to wells. Wells are very sacred to the Celtic people. There's all kinds of fun superstitions around wells and the ways you walk around, how many times and on what days, and you leave little cluties in the trees over a well. There's a whole thing.
Yeah.
So here we have Bridget as the midwife, Bridget as the healer, connected to the weld and the sea. Then we have Bridget's third face, where she is the poet. She speaks the words of wisdom. She is the orator. She knows exactly what to say and when to say it. And here we have Bridget of the sky, of the air, right, words and communication. And for the Celts, language was a big deal. Your words could curse or heal. Satire was illegal in the Celtic world because it was believed to be cursing someone to speak satire. So there's, to say someone was a poet wasn't just like, oh, she writes poetry, how cute. It was not, it can be considered very twee in our over culture.
Right.
It's not. Poetry is very powerful. It is spell work. So here we have Bridget in these three faces. And as Elvira was talking about with the corn dolly, we have this bride, and Bridget's name is often pronounced as bride or breed or Brigga. And there's all of these things that were done with that corn dolly on the eve of Imbolc. Or with your clothing, you would go and put your clothing outside the front door, just like the dolly. A bundle of rushes were often left outside. All of these things were left outside, so Bridget would come and cleanse them and bless them and bestow her energy on them. And there's a few fun little things that were said, like, Breed, Breed, come to my house tonight. Open the door for Breed and let Breed come in. And then the rushes were brought into the house as a blessing from her. And, of course, she would get beer and food and fun stuff. Chanting, Breed, Breed, come in, thy bed is ready. Breed, Breed, come over and make your bed. Yes, and that's all I can see in my notes because they're messy.
Well, and you were talking about the mound, which is the mound of the mother. The belly is, you know, the swelling belly, and there are other things about the cave being the womb, the internal. And so we go into the same concept of the new life coming forth. And so there were processionals. There was usually, there can be places like with labyrinths inside to walk the labyrinths, and, you know, the island of Malta. There were all kinds of things with regards to mounds or beehives or, you know, and then inside all of these kinds of labyrinthing walkways and chambers. So there is to be said that the earth was honored as much in the physical form as it was as a spiritual form. And the initiations and the things that would be part of this process.
Right. And there's lots of archaeological evidence that caves have been used by cultures all over the world as an initiation location, right? Because it is that womb, tomb energy. It's where you go to be born and where you go to be born from or die to or, you know, that process. So there is, and if you've ever read anything about shamanism or initiation into some of these old indigenous cultures, there is a process of being torn apart. Of being disembodied and then remembered, right? So that happens in the cave, this process of rebirth and initiation. And, you know, there's... And I've been initiated a few times into a few different traditions, and it is dying and being reborn. And there's always jokes, you know, like, oh, I hope you make it, and things like that, because we're humans and we're jerks, and we like to scare each other. But legit, our ancestors, especially those who were going to become the healers and priestesses of their communities, some of them didn't survive. This was a harrowing task to be put through to go and survive this initiatory process.
And, you know, obviously we talk about the illusion mysteries, the lesser illusion mysteries, the greater ones, but this was also a time in Greece when this actually took place. So all over the world that we have been able to gather information and found these facts out, whether we find them out on this show or they're out there in its internet form or book form, is that it is a time of initiation and death and rebirth process. So that, I think, is another part of what we're seeing. It's funny, she said satire is cursing, and I thought, oh my, politically that must be real interesting.
I know, I think about stuff like that all the time. Like, this is just how the brain works. Like, what if my ancestor, not only would someone probably lose their mind if they were just time warped
into this place,
in the modern world, but the way that we communicate and speak about each other is, it's terrible.
Yeah.
The freedom of anonymity that the internet gives to people is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, blah, blah, blah.
But it is part, well,
my soapbox.
You know, this is part of doing a show is making it relevant to what is happening in the world and what is happening with our experience of being in this world.
Right.
I mean, I'd love to think, oh, I'm going to become, you know, involved in this initiatory thing. I'm going to be in this wonderful place. I'm going to be, it's idyllic, I'll be very spiritual and, you know, woohoo. And even those people that have chosen to go to monasteries and to go into those aspects are being pulled literally back into this world to walk and work in it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is because it's time to be present here.
Right.
And so whether we're present on our show or we're present in our daily life, it's being present. And the gift of.
All right, a couple more things about Bridget.
Oh, goody, goody.
Okay. So we talked about leaving your stuff outside. There was also this whole thing around the ashes from the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, fire festival, you would have a fire, but as Elvira mentioned, it wasn't about the heat, it was about the light.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the morning, you would divine in the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
You would look for signs of Bridget's blessing
mm-hmm.
in the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
And often, the dolly that was created was processed around town.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the reclaiming community in the Bay Area does. We make a huge flower dolly,
mm-hmm.
and she is processed during her invocation in the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also a time where anyone who's been initiated into the reclaiming tradition gets to be honored, and they
Ooh.
Talk with the Bridget dolly.
Right.
And folks know, oh, they were initiated this
yeah. month,
because it's not... in the reclaiming tradition, anyway, it's not something that's super public. It's a very
mm-hmm.
private
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't always know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not required because we're anarchists and we would never force someone to announce they've been initiated. It wouldn't work. But the other thing is these strips of cloth that are all over Ireland, these clúidis. So you have strips of cloth that have been blessed or put into a sacred well, or your prayer is written on it, or you've whispered your prayer into
mm-hmm.
the cloth,
mm-hmm.
and then they're tied into trees around well heads. And
oh.
you'll see clúidi trees all over the Irish countryside still.
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day, people
mm-hmm.
have, you know, you walk around the well three times sunwise, you say your prayer, you put the clúidi in, you do, it's still done
mm-hmm.
to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty fun.
Wow. I wonder if they call a pool a well.
I don't know.
I mean,
there are wells all over the place.
I know.
So.
I was just thinking if I started seeing that around our pool here at the clubhouse, I'd be worried because, you know, then I'd go, wait a minute, everybody, you actually are doing that? Of course, you know, I live with in a senior community, so who knows? Maybe somebody lost their mind.
Hey, well, you never know.
But that's neat. I like
yeah.
that idea. We got to go find a well and do that.
Yeah.
I don't know where there is one.
Well, there's fountains,
I mean,
right? We have
right.
fountains.
Okay.
That kind of works.
That does work because a part of the process is fountains, wells.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
things
we
like
think
that.
Of, when I was a kid, a wishing well was a fountain.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a well,
mm-hmm.
but a kid, you know, to a kid, it's a. There is a spot in Calistoga where the spring water. There's our
kitchen
Ooh, well,
right,
where the
right.
spring water just empties out onto the side of the road, and people go and fill their water jugs there all
oh,
the time.
Well, there
Maybe
you go.
We should go up there and have a ritual and
that would
decorate
be
it.
Nice. And then we'll have to take some pictures, post it on the Facebook.
Yeah, that would be fun. We should
yeah.
decorate
yes.
the
yes.
well.
See, we're going to have field trips.
Yeah. The other thing around the dolly, the giant dolly,
mm-hmm.
is that at some point she started, this was often a day where girls and boys were put in awkward situations, and they were, you know, partnerships and pairings off, and family deals were often made around
right.
this time of the year. So at some point, it used to be the girls had to go and do these things, and then the boy had to go and do these things, and the dolly and all of this was involved. And I don't know how this transitioned. It's very curious to me. I'm going to do more research. But at some point, you would go door to door, and instead of carrying the dolly, you would ask for donations for poor Biddy instead of bride or breed.
Right.
Poor Biddy. And then you would take the donations, and they would go to, like, the poorhouse or the charity or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And so the children started doing collections.
Wow.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird. How do you get from initiation bride to that?
Yeah. I don't know. But I like it, and I'm curious about the origin. So
yes.
I'm looking more into it.
This is good. There are more things to find out, and we can come back and share them at another time. But so we do have, obviously, a ton of different goddesses.
Mm.
Some of them, of course, we already have talked about. Some of them are, you know, Lakshmi and Saraswati. These are the spring goddesses.
Mm.
So even though we're looking at some of the other traditions where maybe the goddesses, this would be the time they would start to call upon them.
Mm-hmm.
To bring forth. So, and I believe there is the white shell woman in the Pueblo Indians, and she would gift white stones and white shells.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So that would be another one of those, you know, bringing forth the new gifts, the white gifts.
And we have this random Groundhog Day.
Yes, I'm wondering about groundhogs. I mean, when I looked up the information, it says American.
Yes.
So it isn't exactly even American Indian.
Right. But one thing I read is it's connected to the Pennsylvania Dutch, right? Like so there's got to be some Dutch freaking origin, right?
Right.
But in the Scottish, the Gaelic, Scottish Gaelic worshipping communities, there's a proverb, the serpent will come from the hole on the brown day of breed, though there should be 3 feet of snow on the flat surface of the ground. Blah, blah, blah. I'm sure in Scottish Gaelic it makes much more sense. But basically it's the same thing.
The
weather is shite on Brigid's day.
Right.
Winter is over.
Right.
If it's beautiful, you're screwed.
Yeah.
More winter is coming. Right. So
probably did get translated into a groundhog. But then, you know, again, groundhog is a burrowing animal, so obviously we go to the same concept.
And there is this story of the hag, and I can't remember how to pronounce this word, the Kalich, which I know is not right, so I apologize. In my brain somewhere, the correct pronunciation exists, and I can't get it. Anyway, it is one of the traditions is that it's up to her when she finally goes to sleep, right? And so if she is being particularly cantankerous, winter lasts longer, and she's decided to go out and gather wood for herself to stay warm.
Right.
If she has already fallen asleep, then it's the spring maiden who is waking up and taking over. And I love that idea.
Yeah, I really think that is nice.
There's some crone cranky out in the woods, and it's like, no, screw you, more winter. I love that so much.
That is great. So that's going to be a visual for this time frame. Thank you. Really is, it has that
makes
feel. Yeah,
I love crones, they're my favorite.
And thanks. I'm on the verge of, or I'm at the elder stage working to the crone, or some days I can be really crabby and crummy.
All crones are cranky, but I love the cranky ones.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting thing is that throughout my life, I have gotten different people that have been in service businesses, whether it was hairstylists or nail people or clerks or whatever it was that were out there, women who were sharp-tongued and cranky. And I always got along with them.
Yeah.
It was just like they'd come across as whatever, and I'd just go, okay, you know, and
love
just
it.
Really get into it. And then I had a couple of, you know, recently in my life, I've had a couple of older women who are crones, and one has passed, who definitely did not mince words.
I love it.
And I mean, it didn't mean that I always walked away going, oh, that's really nice. I'd get really kind of, no. And I'd get defensive, and she'd have told me something, and then I'd go away, and then I'd come back, and I always did, and say, yep, I just want to say I apologize for anything I have, you know, I put out, but you were right, and this is the way, and it was, but no nonsense, right to the core.
To that. Yep.
Yes, well, we all do.
Yes.
And sometimes we do even when we're not crowned, as some of our clients might attest.
Sure.
So, but obviously there's also the part that we start parting, because guess what? We've got Mardi Gras that we start coming into. We have the energy is starting to rev up.
Yes.
For party.
Warming up, heating up, speeding up. Yeah. What are some things you do?
Oh, go out and raise hell.
not for Mardi Gras.
Oh.
On Imbolc.
On Imbolc. Oh, okay, fine. Yeah, well, I was going to, you know, go out and maybe drag race. My daughter's drag racing these days along with her husband, and I'm like, I'm thinking, God, I wish I had my Jensen Healy. I could do road racing, you know. And that has passed away into another life. But for Imbolc, let me think. Well, I do meditation, and I work on going into the dark. I go into the dark, and I sit with the dark, and I sit with the sludge.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting. Somebody was talking. It was one of the books I just read about mud ceremony. And it's basically, what is it that's got you stuck? Yeah. And I was telling Phoenix that this particular time frame has been a little bit intense for me. My husband, who's been deceased for 11 years, this was our, the second was our anniversary. So I'm sitting at the ancestor altar, and I'm having a, I'm working on the book and trying to get the things written and all, and I couldn't get any farther, and I just was really feeling kind of stuck. So I got up, and I went over to the ancestor altar, and I looked up at his picture, and I started talking to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was the things that were sticking in me, not about his being not here, but what was sticking.
Yeah.
And to me, talking to the ancestors, if anyone came in, they were, I would be talking to myself, but talking to my ancestors is a time. This, I have used this particular period to do that, because in that, there were things I needed to let go.
Yeah.
And sometimes it isn't just about making something and writing it and burning it or doing it. It's just about speaking it out.
Yeah.
And as you do, you hear it, and you release it, and the tears come to wash it away.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it. I made the corn dolly, which I thought was a lot of fun, actually. I'm like, oh, wow, I'll do this. So I did that, and then I have a little bag that I have that I've got mugwort and a red string that I have tied at both ends together, and I'm going to use that for doing some true dreaming.
Nice.
So what do you do?
Well, again, as I mentioned, we in the reclaiming tradition, we work with Bridget, and we make pledges. So every year at this time of the year, I pledge to what I'm going to do or commit to or what have you in the coming year. And often there's a trance process or a meditative process to help you figure out what that is. And I had a really hard time with that part of it this year. I wasn't getting any clear answers. So I made a pledge to Bridget, but I'm still sort of sitting with it to see exactly what it means. And since New Year's Day, I've been doing some ongoing deep cleaning, spiritual cleaning, literal cleaning, physical cleaning, cleaning out, clearing out, decluttering, getting rid of stuff. And that's probably going to take to the spring equinox because we're, my partner and I are basically going through our entire house, and decluttering is the best way to put it. There's there's been a lot of stagnation in our lives, in our relationship, in our household.
And now our time is almost up. Mirror is going to be our subject for next week, and you will do more decluttering.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.